Before we start this episode, I would like to take a minute to tell you about the upcoming Texas Woodworking Festival, where makers and enthusiasts come together to celebrate their love for the craft. Join us for this two-day event filled with fun, creativity, and inspiration. The festival brings together lumberyards, woodworking organizations and clubs, content creators, furniture makers, and tool manufacturers for a weekend of food, drinks, and all things woodworking. This year, the festival is launching educational seminars where you'll have the opportunity to learn from some true masters of the craft, including Frank Straza, Philip Morley, Kim McIntyre, and Andrew Hunter, just to name a few. The festival will be held in Austin, Texas on August 26th and 27th. Visit TexasWoodworkingFestival.com for more information and to buy tickets. Whether you're a seasoned woodworker or just starting out, there's something for everyone at the Texas Woodworking Festival. Hi, and welcome to episode 453 of the MWA podcast. I'm Kyle, and I'm joined by my co-host, Sean. Brian and Mark are on assignment this week. Today, we're excited to have Philip Morley as our guest. Phil is a classically trained fine furniture maker, woodworking instructor, and a devoted husband, father, and troublemaker. Phil works out of his studio located in the beautiful Texas Hill Country. So welcome to the show, Phil.
Hey, why does everyone call me a troublemaker? Like, I don't understand that.
It's something with your attitude. I mean, I never met you before. And the first time I met you, it's like, all right, this guy's a troublemaker.
This guy's trouble.
But you also have that attitude where you want to give you a hard time. I don't know why. It's just like,
no, I told my wife that. I was like, why does anyone give me a hard time? She's like, really? You're asking that? It's obvious.
Well, thanks. That's how I was introduced to you. Not that we've ever met before, but the first, Phil Morley, he's a troublemaker. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
That guy.
That's great.
That guy. You're just well known.
Exactly. Well, you're also going to be at the Texas Woodworking Festival. So this is the next in our line of promotions for the Texas Woodworking Festival, having some of the people that are going to be there or exhibiting or part of the educational stuff. But before we talk to Phil and find out what he's doing, let's dip our toes in the woodworking news. So not too much going on this week, but some interesting things, at least for chair makers like myself. Sean Murphy of Sean Murphy WindsorChairs.com, he is actually selling some turning blanks for Windsor chairs. So he has kits all made up that have the blanks ready to go. Now, this is kiln-dried maple that he gets from a source, and he's already pre-cut it in, you know, oversized links for armchair, fan back, side chair, or your bow backs or hoop back chairs. And he even includes a extra in there. So if you mess up on one of your turnings, you do have at least an extra stick in there. And they're all ranging from about, $62 to about $70. And with shipping, it's ranging from about $88.50 to about $100. So not too bad if you can't find blanks in your area. And these are already at 2 inches round. So, I mean, they're ready to chuck up and start turning without having to do, you know, if you split your own out or you're using some other stock, you're going to have a lot of waste. So with this, these are already ready to go. So not too bad.
So forgive my non-chair making, but to use this in your Windsor chair project, you got a seat and you got the whatever the bow of the back is to tie all this stuff together, depending on the style.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it. This is all the other turnings. I mean, at least the blanks for the turnings for legs and spindles and all that.
Yeah. Now, it's not anything that's going to be bent. It's not like a bow.
Usually
you're doing those out of oak or something like that. But these are all your straight turning, like your legs, your stretchers, and arm posts and things like that. So it's basically everything that you would turn for a winter chair.
It seems awfully reasonably priced.
Yes. And Sean is one of the only folks you can actually get some seat blanks from. And you can get single piece Eastern white pine seat blanks that he can also. So you can basically get all your materials except for, you know, like your oak and stuff like that you're going to bend, whether it be oak ash or whatnot. So not too bad. I think it's a great thing, you know, if you don't have access to blanks, and or if you don't want to spend the time splitting blanks out, or, you know,
sawing them down and doing all that kind of stuff. You can basically order some from here. And I thought it was really nice that he put in an extra piece in there just in case. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, Sean does also sell, you know, already turned legs and spindles and stuff like that if you want to buy those too.
That just satisfies all the different kinds of mm-hmm. makers. You know, you want to be the guy that felled the tree to make the chair, or you yep. want to just get pre-made pieces to put together like Lincoln Logs. That he kind of provides everything in between. It's pretty slick.
Yeah, you still got to make the Lincoln Logs, but at least
yeah, you got to drill the holes. But I mean, a large majority of that is yeah. be, you know, purchased, and that's actually kind of nice. It's lowering the barrier of entry
yep.
To certain makers, right?
Yep. And Sean also sells the all metal reamers in both 11 and 6 degrees that work mm-hmm. with some of my jigs too. So mm-hmm. He's out of the 6 degrees, but they're coming in soon, any day now. And he does have a pre-order form where you can still get them at the original price. I think if you wait till he gets them in stock, he will be charging a little bit more for them this time.
There you go.
And next up, the Wood Whisperer, our friend Mark, has a new video out that I thought was pretty interesting. He's actually doing a review of the parallel clamp sold by Harbor Freight. I think it's the Bremen,
yeah, whatever.
Something like that.
Is he a YouTuber?
Yeah, I think so. He's got some school too. I don't know. There's some Morley guy that has a couple of classes with him. I don't know.
Yeah. I think I saw him in a magazine once.
Yeah.
About 15 years ago, once or twice.
But
this was an interesting video. I watched it the other day. I haven't been in a Harbor Freight in a very long time. I think I understand the general rule that you don't get anything that has a plug on it from Harbor Freight. Yeah. I get that. I've seen good reviews of something like motorcycle lifts and other, you know, mechanical things. Sure.
Yeah.
You know, but this was very interesting, and I don't know if we want to spoil his findings, but because it's a good video as far as how he kind of scrutinizes these things. Mm-hmm. They're incredibly inexpensive for what they are.
They're like $35 or something right, like that.
For like a 24 inch. I've got some jets, and he talks mm-hmm. about the price of most of the parallel clamp styles mm-hmm. And the ranges of them, and does a comparison between Bessie and Jet and these and others. And it comes down to what you guys expect. The quality of the materials kind of comes into play for what you're getting. The cool thing though is right on the, when you purchase these things from Harbor Freight, again, should you feel brave enough to go into that store, it says lifetime guarantee, and they legit busted one, took it back, and they were like, yep, here's a new one. Thank you for that one. And confirmed that was an ongoing process. Will they do it forever? I don't know. But they abused them in a way that maybe not everyone would. So you might get a longer life out of them than a few months that Mark experienced.
Yeah.
And Mark tried to work them.
Yeah. And he bought four of them, and I think he only had one that had to fail. And like I said, they replaced it. No questions asked, which is nice. You know, I think it comes down to, you know, what you do. I think if you're a hobbyist, these might work great for you for years and years and years.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're more on the professional side or you're using them, you might want to, you know, look at some of the other ones. So I think it's a use case, but yeah, you know, when it comes down to it, I mean, he had to give his thumbs up to it. I mean, you know, it's interesting. So,
yeah. I mean, I'll not parallel clamps, but I've got like some, I think they're Jet.
Mm-hmm.
F-style clamps that have flat out failed on me.
Yeah,
doing kind of what these were doing for him, where they just stop biting when you tighten the handle.
Yeah,
and what is that? There can be marring, there can be misalignment, there can be a lot of things going on. But it's not. I mean, this probably isn't the only type that has that problem. You know, I'm sure you can work a Bessie clamp to the end of its life, and it'll start failing as well. I don't think you can return it to the store and get a new one. So, you know, take it for what it is.
Exactly.
It was interesting. Like early on in it, he mentioned the different like clamping forces that the different clamps are rated at. And interesting to find that like the jets, which are the most expensive, are actually some of the lowest rating. Mm-hmm. But he does say like, oh yeah, so Bessies are like rated at 1,000 pounds. If you are putting 1,000 pounds on that joint, you're doing something wrong. If that's what it takes to make it kiss together, you know, there's something else at play there. You don't necessarily need that. It's great that it does it, but you know, very, very interesting video. I hope everyone checks it out. It's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. When I first got into woodworking, I made the big clamp mistake. I'm going to give me some parallel clamps. I went to some woodworking show. I think it was the woodworking shows when those were traveling back in the day.
Stopped at the Peachtree booth.
I forgot if it was Peachtree or not, but it might have been. But I bought on sale 6 72-inch Bessie parallel clamps because I figured, hey, these clamp up small too. You know, 72 inches. Right. I'll never need any more clamps. This will work.
What's a 6-foot bar sticking off the end of your
exactly,
bench?
Exactly. Exactly.
You're holding the toothpick.
Yeah, uh-huh. I was a complete idiot. But you know, I still have them. I've used them like 3 times. Mm-hmm. Anyway, no, the first project I had, I used them, and then quickly realized my mistake.
I went a slightly different route. And I honestly, probably from something I saw Mark doing back in the day, I did get jet clamps. They were on sale one Christmas time, and I got 248s and 224s for relatively a steal, you know?
Yeah. I got two of those packages. Yeah.
Yeah. So now at this point, as I look at them, I think I've got two 48s and 4 24s, and that serviced pretty much. I thought I had 12s. I don't think. No, I don't have 12s. I kind of, like you said, I use the 24s as they go small too. You know, I ever need it. But it was nice because that clamped up like a whole blanket chest I was doing, you know, so that capacity is good. I'd have to change where I hang them if I'd get a 6-foot clamp, but that's a whole nother story.
Exactly.
But no, I mean, honestly, this, you know, made me curious enough to maybe try it. I don't use mine enough to even invest in more at this point, even at $30 some, you know, but, if this was out, you know, 15 years ago, I might've tried it. It might've worked just fine for me, for sure.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. I'm pretty well set on clamps. But you know, I might go in and take a gander at them.
You know, you can never have too many.
Yeah. Well, right next to my gym that I go to is a Harbor Freight, so it's not like out of my way. So anyway, we'll see. We'll see. So Phil, do you have a clamp preference on the for parallels?
I feel like you need a mixture of clamps. I'm not a huge fan of parallels.
Okay.
It's interesting it says 1,000 pounds because I don't know if that just wears out after a while because it is the classic thing when I teach somewhere. I always make sure I have an I-beam clamp. And when students go to start putting those joints up and that glue starts swelling that joint, they, you know, give up with the parallel clamps. They've torqued it down. It will not budge. And you grab one nose and it's a quarter turn. Boom, it closes. And so that's why I prefer, I have sash clamps.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, they are just freaking so expensive. And they're the most, like, the least sexiest thing to buy. You spend like $3,000 on clamps and not even get that many clamps, and you're like,
and that's what I have. Yeah, that's the other thing.
Or,
right,
you know, I could have something else that's more fun.
Yeah,
a hell of a lot shinier. You know,
I need more. I always go over to a buddy of mine, Gary Weeks, and I'm like,
hey, there you go.
Can I borrow some of your clamps?
There you go.
I have a bunch, but you know, you always need more. So it is interesting. I mean, I haven't watch much YouTube stuff, but I saw that he was doing that and I was kind of curious because I do need some more F styles, so I might purchase a few of those and give
them
a go.
It's a decent watch. If you got the time, check it out, because
I mean, definitely.
How he gets it to fail, I get it, because it's not aluminum, but it seems like aluminum, and you know how malleable aluminum is. It depends on what you're doing and how often.
Yeah.
And I think he may have some more of these videos coming out, because I think he bought a bunch of parallel clamps. So.
I thought he was originally doing a whole shootout.
Yeah. So I think he quickly realized that it takes just a while to review one set, because you got to do glue ups after glue ups after glue ups to see if they're.
Well, this one, I think it took him, it was like
4 months. Yeah.
Yeah. Flash cut months, because, like, he's like, and he, you know, the general, oh, I bought a thing and unboxed it. You're going to see just that, that no. experience. He's like, no, I want to put this through its freaking basis. And so they use the hell out of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I definitely appreciate about Mark. He puts a lot of work into it. He's, you know, I would never want to do those reviews.
Right?
Review articles are the worst articles.
Oh, they can be awfully polarizing, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good on him.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So who do we have to thank this week for our Patreon shout out?
You know, we always like to give a shout out to our Patreons. And this week we're giving that shout out to John Marin. I'm sorry. It looks like Marine. I don't think that's how you say your last name. But John, let us know how you say your last name. If you would like to be like John and support us, you could go to patreon.com/MWA podcast like he did and support us there.
Fantastic. So let's move to what's in the shop. So Sean, what are you working on?
Not much. I'm going to say I have paralysis by analysis, and that is a common thing and it can be applied to a lot of things. Currently, that's my backyard. The front yard was last fall's project. It's doing okay, and a little bit of focus is going on that. But the backyard is a dust bowl, and I just today actually purchased 75 pounds of grass seed, and I measured it the other day, and there's a Memorial Day project, as we're recording this is before Memorial Day, in my very future, and I am constantly thinking about how am I going to water that? Where is it going to be a problem? Where does the sun hit and where doesn't it hit? And it's just daunting. Mm-hmm. I really hate it, but I like it. And my wife, I can tell my wife's bothered by my attention I'm giving to that. And but hopefully it'll be okay in the long run. I did the whole scorched earth, burn down the front yard, replant and grow new seed last year. And it 90%+ was successful. I'm good with that. I think I've proven to myself that I've done that, but now that was about 4,000 square feet. Backyard is about 9,000 square feet, and I've got a lot to do. Hmm. And that's a lot of space to cover. I bought like 4 more hoses. I've got more hoses than I ever thought I'd need because I do separate sprinklers to span this. I don't have irrigation anywhere, and multiple 100-foot lines running from splitters. And it's, the problems of having a large plot of land and grass not growing
and then you got bees chasing you all around
too. The bees are fine. The bees will like the water. That's that's fine. There's a certain number of flower weedy type things that they can have at. The grass will not provide that, and yes, I'm probably going to kill some clover in the process that is growing where the grass it should be. But at this point, my kids practicing in the backyard have torn up entire sections of grass, so it is just bare in the middle where they are running around or bouncing balls or whatever, and not to mention dogs doing his work. There's a lot going on. I mean, I've got a harebrained idea to rent a bucket truck and take some trees down. I mean, there's a whole lot going on. We'll see.
Well, take pictures.
Yeah.
I've some videos, especially if you're removing trees. That could be fun.
Well, I've had detailed questions from both my wife and my oldest son at this point. He's like, wait, you're going to do what? I'm like, I've taken pieces of that off before.
Yeah.
But if I drop that, that'll hit the garage. And if I drop that, that might hit that other tree. So I got to do it in piecemeal. And I did see at my office, the company that owns the building we're in, they just had one of their bucket trucks parked out front the other day. So I think I might ask the owner if I could borrow it. We'll see.
Oh, that reminds me, speaking of your sons in lacrosse.
Yes.
You heard as we were recording this earlier this week, Jim Brown passed away, the famous Cleveland Brown running back.
And yeah, they didn't name it after him, but yes.
Yes. But anyway, you know what his favorite sport was?
Lacrosse. He was huge in lacrosse.
I was like astounded. Can you imagine that guy coming at you?
And you got it. If you didn't see it, there were memorial things posted about him. And I had seen because we're into lacrosse.
Yeah,
he spoke at a thing for the Professional Lacrosse League a couple years ago. And they brought up his legacy in that. But we're talking about the '50s. He was playing lacrosse like a long time ago. But him, the old black and white picture of him with a lacrosse stick. I don't even remember if they were wearing, he might not have had a helmet on at all at the point, but it's a traditional lacrosse stick with a bent wood and leather pulled down and woven together. That's the head the stick he played with.
Mm-hmm.
It's an older time, but yeah, it's crazy how much that infiltrates American football. Actually, Bill Belichick is also an enormous lacrosse fan.
Hmm.
I've heard from other multiple players that have said he brings that up regularly in meetings with his NFL football team.
Wow.
Of the somehow how it relates to lacrosse. I actually saw a thing the other day that Wayne Gretzky was interviewed by somebody, and he mentioned, obviously, great hockey player. He played lacrosse until he was like 16 years old.
Hmm.
It's the national summer sport of Canada. It's a huge sport.
Yeah.
He said, I was done playing. That's the toughest damn game in the world. I was out of it. I went into hockey. It's even easier. You know, it was very interesting. But yeah, Jim Brown, sad to lose him, but he was he was an advocate for both. Obviously, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. I believe he's also in the Lacrosse Hall of Fame.
Okay, cool.
As well. He was a cool dude.
Yeah, I just thought I'd mention that. As soon as I found that out, I did know that about him. And I was like, that's cool. So anyway, I figured you probably knew, but just in case.
Yeah. I know those things.
Yeah.
So how about you, man?
Well, I finally finished the finally retired my old lathe tapering jig and finished my new one. So that's good. It works fantastic. I made a number of little improvements and creature comforts to it. I posted a little video on it.
I saw that video.
Yeah. I also put a little thing on my YouTube channel. So, and it seemed to catch hold. I mean, my YouTube channel is mainly kind of little tutorials about how to use my jig. So I don't get a lot of traffic on it, but this one I've gotten humongous numbers, at least for me on my YouTube. So I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. So I guess it, touched a nerve with, folks out there. So I've been getting a lot of DMs and questions too. So it's been great.
It's at least it's interesting if you're not into it, you know, and I don't know if everyone gets what you're doing. I look at that and go, the operation that you have it set up in, perfect. Adjusting that and getting it set right must be a royal pain in the ass.
Nope.
Really?
Nope. I get it dialed in on the first time.
Do you put a rod in the lathe to set up against, like something that you know the point is going to be?
Yeah,
right
yeah. There's setup blocks I got against the headstock, and for that. Okay. For the way I have it set up now, it's 15/16 of an inch. So I got a 3/4 inch setup block
and a
3/16 setup block.
That's the east to west, setting the north to south. How did you determine that?
You just do that one time. And can be a little finicky, but you do that one time and then you got everything dialed in. So you can go right back to it. So yeah.
Slicker and grease.
Yeah. It works. It works pretty well. So, and anyway, hopefully, like I said, I'm glad, you know, every time I post something like that, I go, you know, I've been using my similar jig, which I posted about for, you know, 2 years, but that was 2 years ago before I did some major postings on it. So it's just like, you know, I know it's new to some folks, but sometimes, you know, when you work with something almost every day, you forget that some people haven't seen it or heard about it. So
is this a router? Setup thing. What is this?
Lathe?
On the lathe. It's just turning on the lathe. It's basically what I call pattern turning. So you got a lathe tool. So it's like one of those carbide cutters, and it just goes in and follows the pattern that's on the bottom there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's like a start. It's like a almost a U, and it follows it in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, tower so with
duplicator. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is basically a duplicator. Yeah.
But the taper jig is basically replacing the banjo on the bed of the lathe, and this thing is standing on a tower and sticking out equivalent to where it's riding, and it's slicker than hell. Kyle, you can say, like,
we'll see,
what's a time changing between trying to actually turn a 6-degree taper and this thing pattern turning a taper?
Oh, it's much easier. The big thing is exact, because my jigs are hollow, so I got to keep everything concentric. So the only way to do it is on the lathe. So this keeps everything concentric between the hole I have drilled through the tapered base unit for my stretcher drilling guide. So it keeps everything concentric and, you know, in true. So there's only one way to do it, and that's on a lathe. You can do it with the tenon cutter, and it works pretty well, but you're still going to be off just a little bit because it's really hard to keep everything exactly Good Citrix.
Ooh, so, that's cool. Yeah. I'm watching it on your YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. Now they're, I said, I've seen people use similar type setups to do like spheres on lathes and stuff like that. So I think it was Way Too Dusty on YouTube at Way Too Dusty, not on YouTube, on Instagram, that I first saw that he was using it to do some turnings. And I went, hey, that would work for doing tapers on the legs. At that point, I was thinking about the legs and stuff like that. That would work perfect for putting a 6-degree taper on a leg. So,
I mean, it's the same concept. Learn to do.
I've
never done lathe work.
It's intimidating at first, but otherwise, it's not incredibly hard to get into. It's hard to be good, like anything. Yeah.
But it's incredibly addictive, though. Once you start going down that rabbit hole.
I have the first piece I turned was a little like 4-inch bowl, and I have that in my office, just on a shelf. It's collecting dust, but I've talked about it a few times, and it takes you right back to like, yep. And I can point out like that little spot right there. I was getting chatter when that was doing that, and I know how to do that better now. But yeah, it's like it's very interesting. But like pattern turning, like pattern routing, like this is a known thing. Like I've been to the Louisville Slugger Bat Factory, and they do exactly this.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's production patterns. And it's super, it is simple in that, but for the home user, if you're doing something like this, or Kyle's making jigs that need a tapered plug, this is very beneficial.
That's why I do my chair legs is with a router on the lathe, and then everyone gets mad at me.
the old school
trough and router.
Yeah,
you had it go wrong on me once, and it was kind of terrifying. But
the router's a bit more aggressive. Might do it unbelievably fast too. Your mileage may vary depending on how you want to take that. You have an extra axis turning when you're putting the router up there and grabbing. I'd say
whatever works, but what always just blows my mind is some of these vases these guys turns are just so intricate, and it's just like. And then you talk to them and go, oh, yeah, it didn't take me long at all to do it. And then you see the pricing they're getting for it, and you're going,
But it took them 50 years to get that.
Exactly.
Right.
That's the thing you tell people. It's like, it's this much plus 50 years of experience.
Exactly.
I get to see a lot of amazing turners at Mark Adams.
Oh, yeah.
And it's incredible, like, the stuff they do. It's insane. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. But anyway, besides that, I got a. I'm working on a video. Hopefully, it'll be out next week on the drill bits we sell and recommend. As you know, as I mentioned a few months ago, that my friend and business partner Patrick Brenham had a stroke, so he's kind of out of the drill bit making business. But I did want to pass on. He's doing actually very, very well. So. We're all glad about that. So anyway, and thanks everyone for giving him your thoughts and prayers. But looks like he's definitely on the mend. So that's absolutely fantastic. Right. But so what I have done is, you know, I have got a manufacturer. They're making our Triton line of drill bits. Those are the drill bits with the long center brad so that you can drill at angles that you might need for leg mortises and seat blanks and stuff like that. But the stiletto bits that we made, which had like zero blowout, they were real good for doing spindles and arms and bows. I've worked with the manufacturer, and it's just not gonna, they just can't duplicate what I need to be made. There's a lot of handwork, you know, and talking to Patrick and stuff, it was a little bit more of a art than a science in making those bits. You know, each one he had to grind and then test and then maybe go back to the grinder. So, you know, it was a bit of back and forth that a manufacturer is just not going to have the patience, or that's going to eat into their profit margin doing that type of work. So I have found some bits that come pretty close to performing as well as our stiletto bits. They're not quite there, but they're close and they're pretty good. One of them is almost excellent, but it does require a little bit more prep work and some cleanup work on the back end. But I'm going to have a video, hopefully, like I said, out next week about the bits we sell, which are the Triton bits, and then these bits that we're recommending. So I want to give everyone a notice on that. Hopefully by the time you're listening to this, that video's out. If not, it will be coming out very, very soon.
Excellent.
And besides that, I'm finally finding some time to, hopefully after I get this video all done, is to build the Hi-Vice that I've had the hardware and blanks for almost a year now. So finally getting around to build that. So I'm excited about that.
Excellent.
But with that, Phil, so what are you working on in your shop?
Same thing I've been working on for 3 years. it's a console, so I'm pretty close to the end of the particular record console. It's a chop saw veneer, lumber core. I make all the substrate myself, timbre doors, little hidden stuff, and speakers. Onto the side, you open up the timbre doors, and then the speakers project out.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw you post about that. That's pretty incredible. What's the hardware? Fun.
It's just actuators. It's just limiters and actuators, and then the last part on it I'm trying to figure out now is the lid stay. So basically the main lid goes up, and that's where the record player is and the amplifier, and then the front flips down, and it's got a lined little cubbies, I guess, like to hold your drinks, little holders and stuff, sort of felt lined. And the last part is to figure out the stay for that, which I'm wanting to do a silk stay, but I want it to be retractable. So it as you pull it out, it locks down. And then as you go to put it back, it retracts back into itself. And that'd be like all this springs and different things that'd be hidden. Always takes way too long, but it's fun. It's close. Probably one more week on it, which is always amazing to me. A good probably 60 more hours, and that's just on the finishing touches. That's what I'm working on right now.
That's a good project, though.
Yeah, those audio consoles that you make are just so absolutely fantastic, and it sounds like that's kind of a niche for you that you've fallen into.
People will pay good money for audio cabinets.
You get in the audiophile world and they're buying $100,000 speakers and stuff like that.
Although I will never do a cabinet for an audiophile guy, and he will never call me for a cabinet. You don't put speakers inside a cabinet.
Well, it's
always amazing. I'll get someone give me crap about it. I'm like, I know, I understand, but this is what my client wants. He's not an audiophile nut. He just wants a beautiful cabinet of beautiful equipment. And it sounds pretty damn good.
You're not going to get the highs doing that.
It's crazy.
Yeah. The resonance is going to be all wrong.
Yeah. But there are speakers that are made to be in enclosed environments.
There are, but ideally you don't want
to
put it in with records and whiskey glasses and everything else that's in this cabinet, right? It's not the best, but it doesn't matter. It still sounds fantastic. The speakers too, like the actual reason for them. So I work, so there's a gentleman, Rupert Neve, he's passed for a few years now, but he does soundboards. So basically any high-end recording studio, they're using his soundboards. He's originally from England, but his company is in Wembley, which is bizarre. And a buddy of mine works for that company. And so I, a lot of times, bounce stuff off of him where it's like, okay, not ideal situation. How can I make it better? Can I add certain baffles in the back? And the speaker projecting forward, so having the drivers in front of the cabinet is actually huge. And so that's why the actuators are there. I didn't have to do it. So definitely more of a cool factor, but there is some logic, to do it.
Yeah, it improves the performance a bit by having it. It's a super cool thing. I mean, so is the switch when the door slides complete to then actuate the movement forward?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And, I would love to. It's always one of these things where I put so much time and work into all my pieces, and even still, I know I can make it better. I would absolutely love to have it where, and this is where budget comes in, and have to be somewhat practical, but where you turn the preamp on, It's actually off of the 12 volt from the back of the preamp. You could wire it up to where the timbres actually open themselves.
Yeah.
And then the speakers project out. I mean, how cool would that be? But
that
like,
would be super
I stopped
cool.
myself. I was like, that's.
Yeah, because well, when you crazy. Turn the preamp on, it's got an actuator that turns the amp on. And if you could just tie that
yeah,
into.
Just sense the voltage yeah. and do another thing. Yeah.
You could
yeah.
definitely do it.
You're getting
I love
the...
that stuff. I work with other people. I don't yeah. figure out all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that sounds like Iron Man tech a little bit. Like yeah. that's something he would yeah, have yeah. in his house where it just the shades yeah. would go down, the speakers yeah. would come out, the. Lights
well, it definitely has some shades of Craig Thibodeau and some of his puzzle cabinets.
Yeah. That guy's phenomenal.
Amazing.
Absolutely right? amazing and super nice guy. He actually helped me with the last one.
Oh, cool.
Gave me some advice. The console that just went out of the shop had the lid would go up and then it would actually slide back behind the console because the client didn't want this big lid sticking up. Where it was going, he had this really beautiful scenery, you know, like windows, and you didn't want this big thing. So as it lifts up, so all the hardware I made myself, but then having it basically on gas pistons and then having to counter those with springs so that it wouldn't lift back up. But he threw out some stuff that was very helpful to kind of figure that out. So mm-hmm. but yeah, but this console is kind of the top of the line one. This is the most expensive console I've ever done, and this client has literally sent me his equipment 2.5 years ago.
Oh wow!
So I don't know how he's so paid. I mean, it's not like I've just been working on it for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But he sent his equipment, and anytime you know, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm working on it. He's smart. He's like, if I rush you, I won't get all this extra stuff. Oh, so he's like, sure. I'm just going to let you be your worst enemy. And
yeah, I'm just going to make you feel guilty that you hadn't got it and throw this in. Yeah, exactly.
But no, he's just an amazing client. And, you know, he's just very much of the mindset, like, you're the artist. I'm not going to tell you what needs to be done.
That's a good
so
client.
So it's good and bad. Good and
yeah.
bad.
Yeah. That's a great client.
I'm going to get it done.
And plus, you got some great equipment to listen to for a couple of years.
Yeah, although that stuff is locked up. It's you know, 30 grand of equipment. I'm like, I don't want that near my kids. So,
have you ever been tempted to get? I know there's a bunch of woodworkers that make like bases for turntables and stuff like that. Have you thought about getting into that?
No, not really. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I would love like to go down.
Yeah.
You know, this fills that need of trying to do the best work I can possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
But I also love the idea of production consoles to where and I did this for a little while. I made like 8 at a time and I farmed out a lot of the stuff. So it's still really, really nice, but it's not the crazy Philip Morley stuff. And the price reflects that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I love the idea of making some smaller versions, and I'd have a small one that's coming out with the Guild, a little you know, it's just a small record console that has a couple little timbre doors and a turntable, and that's it. And it's a space for like a speaker, a Bluetooth speaker or something. But I would love to actually produce those as more of a product, because doing the one of a kind thing after, you know, one after the other after the other, I maybe only do, you know, 4 or 5 pieces a year, but it kills you.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of it, you're just like, well, what the heck am I doing? And then you look back in, you're like proud of it, and then you start again.
Yeah.
But to have some stuff that's more production, that I'm not doing all of the work for the production, but I do the design work, is very appealing to me. So I've got lots of ideas, not much time to get those ideas to fruition.
Yeah.
But like most of us.
Right. No, that's very cool.
That's cool. Yeah. Now, are you doing any other commission work, or is it primarily in the cabinets right now?
So right now, the main focus is this cabinet, but I was working on it alongside the cabinet that just went out, which probably is one of my favorite designs. It's the first one I've done curved legs, and the cabinet is like standing up and the legs are supporting it, kind of attached to the side. So it's a real elegant cabinet. And not much equipment in it. It's just for a Sonos turntable, and that was it. Mm-hmm. The doors were meant to look like speakers, but they weren't. So I worked on that, but I'm always doing multiple things. So lounge chairs are happening too, but I need to get this guy buttoned up to where I can say, okay, when you want to pick it up, it goes to California. I really want to deliver it, but I probably shouldn't. Get it out of her, and then it's lounge chairs, desks, another cabinet, bed. Like, just this is all stuff I'm trying to wrap up before September. I'm trying to get it all done so we can take our big road trip.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk to you. So where are you going, and what are you going to be doing in September?
Well, so this trip is kind of a few things for us. So potentially we are thinking about moving. We just don't know how realistic it is yet, but we've been wanting to kind of move for a while, ideally to Vermont. I love New England. I'm from England. It feels more like home. Mm-hmm. I want four seasons. I met my wife in Maine. My wife went to school in Rhode Island. Furniture history is deep there, you know, so there's a lot of different reasons, a lot of opportunities there. But this trip, we're going to be going September, October. We'll be in Vermont, and that's just somewhat vacation. I'll be kind of going out to upstate New York, visiting a few friends up there, working on a couple of different collaboration stuff that we're kind of moving forward with. And then hopefully get to kind of hang out with Tim Coleman. Whilst I'm there too, I'll be really close to him and fly out and teach a few classes whilst we're there. So we'll do 2 months in Vermont, then we'll go up to Maine. Mm-hmm. For I think it's going to be about 3 months, maybe a little longer, but 6 weeks of that I'll be teaching at CFC, co-teaching with Tim Russo. So for they have their 9-month program, I'll be co-teaching case piece study. So wow. 6 weeks the students have to build a case piece, and I cannot wait. I'm looking so forward to it because it's nothing I've ever taught like before. Where what I teach is really not ideal teaching situation, right? It's they're building a project and you're dragging people through it. It's a lot of fun. It's crazy. I learn a lot. Hopefully students learn a lot. But this is more where my passion lies, is just to help guide people. I've built a lot of stuff in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And you kind of demo, and me and Tim will get together, do a few different demos, and then you know they kind of pick the way they want to go, and you're just there to guide them more than anything, and help them through their journey. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm very nervous about it. To get to teach with Tim is a real honor, and to teach at that school. But hopefully, yeah, you know, this will become a thing, and they have me back again. It's the idea. So.
Well, that is fantastic. I'm really jealous of the students having both you and Tim to be instructors. That is going to be fantastic.
It's going to be a lot mm-hmm. of fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really. One of the students was in our 3-month program at Austin School of Furniture, Bunny, and so she told me recently that she's going to be in the program, the 9-month program at CFC.
Oh,
so
wow.
She'll be in the class. Yeah, so that's going to be a lot of fun to have her again. She's a fantastic student. Pretty cool. Makes me a little less nervous knowing someone.
Knowing one,
knowing one person.
exactly. Well, now you have a real passion for woodworking instruction. You've been doing it for years and years and years with the Austin Community College and, of course, yep. Austin School of Furniture, and also teaching and the stuff that you've done with Mark. So where did that passion come from as far as wanting to teach?
Necessity.
But besides the money, yeah.
my thing, so means an opportunity, right? So I am so fortunate that I came from a country that had a fantastic trade program. Mm-hmm. And that's where I learned my trade. I was a joiner. I wasn't a furniture maker, but I was a joiner, and I got introduced to some furniture stuff as a joiner. So having the ability to be able to do that, I think that was embedded in me from the get-go, you know, just being very much aware, like, wow, these teachers are passing on their knowledge to me. And so as I continue to learn and go down my path, it was always important to me that I would be able to pass my knowledge on to others. And My mentor, I've had several mentors, but Michael is the mentor, Michael Kolker. I worked for him for about 7 years, I think, as an apprentice. And, you know, the fact that he let me into his shop and taught me all of his knowledge was just unreal. And it really excelled me in my craft. I give him 100% credit for where I am. And he's still my mentor today. We're good friends and we talk all the time. Actually, that's awesome. We're going to go have breakfast tomorrow. And he's in a project that we did together. And he's like, I don't know what the hell we did. And I'm like, I don't know what we did. So we're just going to sit down, look at photographs and try to figure some stuff out.
Exactly.
But he got me into teaching at Austin Community College, ACC. Yeah. So he was teaching there one, and he still does it. Same class. He's been doing it for forever. One night a week for 16 weeks, and it's called Advanced Woodworking. And he teaches a small table with a drawer and a very green and green arts and crafts style. And I just would go along with him and assist. And that turned into, you know, them saying, why don't you teach? I had a few hurdles because I don't have any diploma. I don't have a high school diploma. I didn't go to university or college, but I went to trade school. So I definitely had the qualifications as far as teaching woodworking.
Right.
But because it is a community college, you have to have a minimum of a diploma. So again, just good people willing to help me out. And we got it figured out, paid some money to basically turn my 3-year trade school into an equivalency of a diploma. It's all very silly, but it opened up that door to where I could teach there. So I taught there for several years, cabinet making, which actually was a class I enjoyed probably the most because it was so easy. We just built a basic kitchen cabinet, a base unit. And it was fun because it's a lot of teamwork and it was a lot of fun. I always enjoyed teaching that class. And advanced woodworking, but it was in Round Rock. And so I'm in Wimberley. Round Rock's way too far for me to go. And so I got a little burnt out. I'm very appreciative of teaching there. I learned a lot, obviously. You learned so much from teaching. But then it just, you know, it became kind of the thing. I forget who it was that asked me to teach. And then you kind of get on a circuit and, you know, you start getting invited to teach all over the country. And so from ACC, I think the first thing was I started teaching at Mark Adams. And so, you know, they reached out, asked if I would teach. I did that. And then other people started. So Florida School of Woodworking, those are the two main schools I teach at. And then Austin Waldo was a student of mine. And he asked me to be a part of the school in Austin. And, you know, I told him, I don't want to start a school, but I think he would be fantastic and I'll help out in any way possible. I was like, no furniture maker should start a school, which isn't necessarily true, but there's been a lot of furniture makers that started schools and they did not go well. If they're anything like me, it wouldn't go well. And Austin's just very, very organized together, got, you know, a lot of background in startup businesses. We started working on it together and started in a very small space and in a little bit bigger space. And now we have a really nice space.
With air conditioning and everything.
With air conditioning and a bench room. And so I became part owner of the Austin School of Furniture and really wanted to see it, you know, succeed. And I was the lead instructor for the 3-month program, which was a crazy commitment, but was a ton of fun. It was a lot of fun. We had some fantastic students. It was just really just blows my mind. And why they're getting into woodworking, just their story, you know, always amazes me. And what we take for granted, right, that we get to do this, and other people really want to be able to do this. So it was neat seeing 12 students dedicate 3 months to really try to have a go at it. And it led multiple of them to take on an apprenticeship and continue their education. That's how I got into teaching. I enjoy it, obviously. But another part of that is I have 4 kids and my wife homeschools our children. And it's hard to make a living at Right. Or Jamaican. Mm-hmm. You know, I go back and forth. I'm like, honestly, if I just stayed in my shop focus, I probably would make more money. But what it's done, like for me teaching, what it's exposed me to and got my name out there and brought certain clients to me, I think it's huge for where right. I am with what I do right now. I really, really enjoy it. I'm always absolutely whooped after a week-long class. But I know I'm a way better furniture maker because of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, you definitely have a passion for it. And that's something that's not in everybody. You got to really have that desire to teach and be able to, you know, enjoy teaching. Right. You know, my mom's a teacher and, you know, and I asked her one time, well, what do you think? You think I could be a teacher? She said, nope.
Flat out. Nope.
You're teaching. I see your stuff. You teach.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a watch my video teaching thing.
Yeah. Different style. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It is a lot. Like
she goes, you don't have the patience to be a teacher.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think my passion does come too from my background.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So being a troubled teen, being dyslexic, not learning like you know, most people tell you should be learning, and then finding the craft and being like, oh crap, I'm good at something like that. Mm-hmm. I want others to be exposed to that. And then even seeing, you know, I have a lot of professionals that take classes, and it's mental health for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, that's why they're doing it. And so, you know, it's so much bigger than just woodworking, and that means a lot to me. To be a small part of that is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is. And then that is one of the things I enjoy. And that's why I got into woodworking, because, you know, I was a professional. I pushed papers all day and you never accomplished anything. You know, you just moved it from one box to another box, basically, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were some minor accomplishments, but not what you get from woodworking. You know, hey, you get here's where you were at the beginning of the day. Here's where you were at the end of the day. Here are all the cuss words you said during the middle of the day, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
So, but yeah, it's absolutely great. Now I will ask you one question. So what do you think is the best lesson/skill a woodworker should know?
Lesson/skill. I'm horrible at this type of stuff, but what I would say, and I see this a lot in classes, is it takes time, right? It takes time, and you're going to mess up. And the quicker you can get over that mess up, the better you're going to be for it. Hmm. And I've seen, and this is something my mentor always said about me, you know, like, it's not like I wouldn't screw up. I'll screw up. But he would always comment like, it's amazing how you don't even give it a second. You just move on, and your strategy is, how do I fix this? How do I come back? And that's huge. And I think that was ingrained in me from trade school, where, you know, we started out with maybe 60, 70 students, and pretty quick we ended up with probably 20, 30. And it was the people that couldn't get past their mistakes. They would get so mad, make more mistakes. They could not get past it. Mm-hmm. And when I teach a lot, I have this that happens where, you know, I tell people, this is not your masterpiece. Like, you should not be expecting this to be your masterpiece. If it is, and this is your first or second ever class, I'm going to be pissed. Because it's taken me a long time to get where I am.
Yeah.
And you expect to be at the same level as me, which, you know, that may sound a little arrogant, but it's more setting their expectations up. It's like, you're going to make mistakes, but think about all the things you did right. And that's what you should be thinking about. So I don't know as far as if that answered your question or not,
but
I would say you've just got to get after it. You know, just move on. You make a mistake, move on.
You see that, you know, all over. I mean, the parents, you know, my wife is a nurse practitioner, but she can't stand to see blood in my house. She will totally freak out, and I'll look at it and go, what's wrong? How can we fix it? You know, like the react button is different for everybody. Yeah. You know, some people in a nuclear apocalypse, some people will riot, and some people will band together and say, like, how can we survive this? And that's what you gotta have. It's that everywhere. You know, if you dwell too long on, oh shit, what happened?
Right.
You're missing the opportunity to
continue. Learning.
And you're learning, absolutely.
And that's the thing. It's like you're learning. And even, you know what? Even we're always learning. We'll never stop learning, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I will tell you right now the mistake I just made today, which was, I cannot believe I did it, but I'm building these boxes, and the way the box works is it gets split open later on. And so inside, I've buried a piece of actual hardwood. So when I split it open, because it's plywood and veneer, and all that, when I split it open, it's a hardwood edge, right? And not plywood. Well, two of the boxes are the same height. One is a smaller one. I took a picture with my tape measure where that piece of wood was on the small one, and on one of the taller boxes, I forgot to double check the third one, and I did the banding, and now it's done. I can't see it. But, you know, I'm like, why would I do it any different than the other one that's the same height as? Well, I freaking did. And so I cut it open, and it took me a minute. I was like kind of open, and I was cleaning up the edges, and I pulled the top. I'm like, why is that Baltic birch?
Son of a bitch.
You know, but I just laugh. I'm like, yep, okay, idiot, move on. And I, you know, luckily it's not the end of the world. I don't have to backpedal. I can fix it. I can come up with different ways to fix it. You know, I can route it out, put a piece in. But that's the main thing is like, I think one of the compliments I get the most is how quick I come up with ways to fix things. I was like, you know why? I've messed up a lot. I've seen a lot of things get messed up. So. The nice thing is, as you move on, it is kind of reassuring that you do, you don't mess up as much.
Yeah.
Like it just, it happens. It's a nice feeling, but it will happen again, like it did to me today.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest or you have more in a long time.
Yeah. Or when you have those mess ups, you know exactly what the fix is, so it's not that big a deal. Yeah. Hey, you know, I either gotta, you know, just patch that with another little piece of wood, or maybe that'll steam out, you know.
Yeah.
You gain experience when you do that. Yeah. Just don't do it too often. If you repeat that mistake a bunch, that's a problem. But
You know, I had a student in a class recently, and he put a mortise right for the front of the leg. It wasn't meant to be there. And he was a very good student. This is his second or third class, but he's definitely got it. But he's young, and he was getting so mad about it. And he was kind of pushing on me a little bit. And so I just kind of, you know, I told him, like, this is how we're going to fix it. But I don't think he could see. And he was like, I want to backpedal and redo that whole leg. I'm like, that's not an option. This is day 5 out of a 7-day class. You're not going to be able to do that. But we just ripped off an 1/8 inch from the face and plugged it and put a piece of veneer, you know, 1/8 inch over it. And by the time we got rounded, you could never see it. And I think that was probably the biggest thing for him to learn. Like he really took a lot away from that. He was like, that was amazing to see like how you fixed that. And I think that was like huge for him to see. And so a lot of times those mistakes, you know, they do give you opportunity to learn and yeah. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I've done the same thing. I've drilled seat blanks at the wrong angle and stuff like that. And you learn how to make a plug on the lathe and, you know, put it in there and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and I remember the first time that happened and I was pissed. I was really mad at myself. But then I thought, I'm going to learn something because I'm going to fix this. And that's where you learn something. And by the time you had that plugged and you redrilled it, you couldn't even know it was there. So,
absolutely.
Oh, don't lie. You know exactly.
We always
the only place you can see the mistake on that particular chair is on the underside.
There you go. All right. So until you're drunk enough to be on the floor looking up,
and you show all your friends that come by.
No, I'm pretty good about that. That's one thing I'm pretty good about doing is not showing
the mistakes.
Not showing the mistakes.
I saw no flaws when I visited.
Exactly. And no flaws were, you know, pointed out either. So anyway. But tell us, you're going to be at the Texas Woodworking Festival. So what are you going to be doing there?
I'm actually going to be doing steam bending. Funny enough, I'm like, why am I teaching steam bending? But it's really more bending wood, different ways to bend wood. And so I'll have some of my chairs where I do bent tapered lamination or where I do steam bend veneers on solid core. And just different things like that. So I think I'm probably going to just have a, I want to do like this mirror. So steam bend, a blank, and then it turns into a shelf. And you can get keys underneath it. So I'm probably going to have a little play here pretty soon, trying that out and talking about how, you know, some of the things I've learned to steam bend kiln dried material. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just it can be done. People do it all the time.
Oh, I've done it. I've done a few hoot backs on yep. kiln dried. You just got to, there's a process. You got to soak it.
There's a process.
Yep.
And so, and you know, I'll be showing different, just, you know, the main thing really for me is like, you can read only so much. You can get only so much advice. You just need to freaking do it. Mm-hmm. And I got so much advice, and, you know, there's definitely people that I'm very thankful. Byron Chanley, I spoke with him a mm-hmm. lot on Skype, and because I had a crap load of these lakes to do, and they were a big blank and a really tight radius. I think it was 6-inch radius.
Wow. Which,
you know, yeah. it was hard to get that done. But, you know, I just kind of tried stuff and learned and had some things that failed, and you just got to kind of do it. So kind of demystifying it a little bit, definitely not coming at it as someone that is the authority on steam bending, but, you know, I am an authority on, I can build furniture, and if I need a steam bend, I figure it out in steam bend. So just sharing my experience.
Oh yeah.
Should be fun.
Should be fun. And yeah, steam bending is one of those things, you will always have failures, no matter how good you are. Yeah,
No matter how good you are. You don't know what's inside that wood.
Exactly.
You know, I've had wood that was perfect, no run out, and it was the worst piece, and it's like right inside. And it always blows my mind. I'm like, nowhere on this blank you can see there's some weird thing going on. Mm-hmm. It's like, yep, there was.
So. Yeah, I always point this out in case we got any new listeners. There's a YouTube channel called Ingle Coach, and it's this guy out of South Dakota, I want to say, or maybe North Dakota, but he builds and repairs wagons.
Yeah,
you should see this industrial setup he got. Yeah, it's for steam bending. You've seen that guy? Yeah.
Yes.
Like, it's like, holy crap. That's and he insane. Doesn't care if it's kiln dried, air dried. Boom.
That's insane. And I'll definitely, you know, I'm not going to be trying to push the boundaries. I'm going to have something that steams pretty easy as far as the section size goes. But, and, you know, it's kind of a weird thing because it will be, you know, it'll already be soaked, you know, and I depend on what it is and stuff, but I soak it a long time. So it'll already be soaked. I will have it already being steamed ahead of time. You know, like, and then we'll pull it out, and, you know, maybe I'll put a few in there, and it may be a failure, it may not. Like, I'm just gonna be chill with it. There's a guy, it's gonna be his last name, but he's from England. He teaches at Mark Adams, and his class is so much fun to look in, because when you teach at Mark Adams, there's a ton of classes going on.
Yeah,
and so I wander around, but his thing is basically, let's just have fun steam bending stuff. And he does the craziest stuff. And he, in England, he does stuff that's, you know, 2 football fields long, that steam bend. I mean, it is insane. Oh. Maybe a football field. But it goes up inside like some crazy, it's just insane stuff. It's architectural steam bend stuff. And
I think really I know the guy you're talking about. I can't think of, but yeah, I think so I've seen this stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's just like, he just gets after it, man. He's just a nutcase. But yeah, really cool.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, should be fun.
It sounds like it. Well, I would want to know of all the stuff that you've built, what are some of your favorite furniture pieces you've built so far?
So one of the things that's my favorite and also I hate it is chairs. So I would say
in general, just a chair.
Yeah, like I don't like building more than one almost anything, but the young chair that I did, 24 of them, I think I'm probably most proud of it because it had steam bending in it. It's a, and I don't know the terms, I'm not good at terms, but it's not a stick chair, it's a frame and rail chair, I guess I would call it, where Scandinavian.
That's the one you had at the last Texas Woodworking Festival?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So I remember sitting in that. Yeah, it's a great chair.
Itself, goes inside and it's haunched, you know, stepped on. It's just a nightmare of a chair. It's like, why did anybody want to build a chair like this? And so all the jigs and everything else I did for that, I think I'm definitely very proud of that piece, but I hated it. It's just, there's no forgiveness in those type of chairs. And so I would say that as far as like an accomplishment. And then, you know, it's usually always the piece I'm working on is my favorite, but I think the record console that just left was probably my favorite piece as far as I think I really nailed the design and execution on that piece. That the Ceph console, I don't know. I'm not very unique at naming my stuff. It's named after the client.
Hey, well, that works. Yeah, that works.
Yep.
Yeah, that is a beautiful, beautiful piece. I love that piece.
For sure.
That is fantastic. I was just watching a little. I got your Instagram opened up, so when you mentioned something, I'm just like scrolling through. Yeah. So, great. Well, I want to, before we leave you, I do have to ask you about your home remodeling projects. I noticed you recently redid the kitchen. That turned out absolutely wonderful. So have you been working on anything else?
So basically that was so that we could Airbnb our house out.
Oh, okay.
Oh, fantastic. So that's a part of how we're making all this work, right? Like, luckily our kids are homeschooled, so we can travel. They typically a lot of times come with me when I teach. We're going to be renting our house out, and then I'm not doing any commission work for quite some time. I have stuff that clients are willing to wait until I get set back up or whatever's going to happen.
Yep.
But I'll be flying out from wherever we are to teach. So that Airbnb and our place out. So the trip we did not too long ago, we went for a month and stayed in upstate New York for a week. My family came out. And then we did Vermont for 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever it was. We Airbnb'd our house out. So that was the fire to get it done, which I'm really glad. We refinanced our home, so we had that money. We didn't want it to disappear. You know how it goes. You put that in the bank, and all of a sudden, it's like, where's the heck's that money gone? We have nothing to show for it. And so it was huge. I mean, we got the roof done a little while back, thanks to the Wood Whisperer. So I do projects for the Wood Whisperer. And
we forgot to mention that.
Smartest thing ever.
Now, did his editor, I think he lives somewhere near in the
Todd lives pretty close. But that, a part of that was paid for the kitchen too. So, you know, it was the time. Cool. But redid the kitchen, redid the bathroom, redid bedrooms, siding, underpinning, landscaping. I was so freaking tired after all of it because I did probably 90% of the work. Hired a painter. We got the outside painted, new windows, new doors. And the only thing I have left to do is we left my son's bedroom totally unfinished and we put a lock on the door.
Yeah.
So as you can imagine, when we rented it, that room looked an absolute disaster because we just shoved everything
into that
room. Everything and all my kids play strings, you know, so those instruments are not small, especially the bass. It's freaking huge. Mm-hmm. So all of that had to live somewhere. But now I need to finish that out. So that's the next project to do. Just trim work, you know, trim work, moving a wall. It shouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, just moving a wall. Big deal.
Just moving a wall.
Cool.
Anyway.
I do have one question before we let you go. Is that's about your studio, so your shop there. So how big a shop are you working out of? And what you got in there?
So this shop is about 800 square feet.
Okay.
Way too small.
Mm-hmm.
I built it pretty much by myself whilst I was working as an apprentice. I would just come at nights and build it. So it's got it's just so stupid. So anyone listening starting out, don't build a fancy shop. Just build a rectangle. Get a metal building. Go as big as you freaking can. My dad told me when he was still alive, he was like, Phil, don't do it. But I did like a break front. It's a garage, but no cars can even get in here. There's not even a way to get them in because there's no ramp. Yeah. But I did it for resale, right? But it has a break front and it's an L. And it's got weird gables, and it's all open eave 2x10s that I hand cut and routed, and it was my mentor's fault, because his home is all awesome crafts made and he did everything. And so, you know, I was like, oh, I want to be like him, and I wish I just built a metal building. But yeah, it's too small. I mean, I have a lot packed in here. I have a big combo machine, a Minimax 16-inch joiner planer, 12-inch blade slider. It can do 9 feet, I think, slide. Tilt and shaper, which I like a lot. The combo machine works really well. It's a torso head.
Those are nice. Did you get that when they still had a shop or a storefront there in Austin?
No, I traded a lounge chair and a bit of cash for this.
Okay. Well, even better. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's been a good machine. Mm-hmm. I've never been super happy with the slider. I've spent a lot of time trying to dial it in. It's not quite where it should be. It's an older model. I've heard, you know, it's just very difficult to dial in. I've gotten it to where I can use it, but I'm still not super happy with it. So it's probably going to go. And I have single machines. I technically have 3 planers, 2 table saws, Y belt sander, 2 bandsaws.
In an 800 square foot shop.
I was going to say, that's a lot in that space. That's
stroke, I mean, stroke sander.
You got the stroke sander. Yep. Yeah, that's a big thing. Yeah.
It's too crowded in here for sure.
Yeah, it's like 2/3 the size of my house, but it's still a pretty tight shop for all you're putting in it, for sure.
It is, and you know, if we end up moving, if things go the way we're hoping it's going to go, a big part of that is to have a much bigger shop, have land, mm-hmm. Build a few cabins, teach classes out of my shop,
phenomenal.
Also do some outreach stuff. So, this year I'm a visiting artist with the New Hampshire Furniture Masters. And so got nominated for that. They said yes, and hopefully I get invited back. I did tell them, like, you know, I'm not in New Hampshire, I'm in Texas. But I think it was Tim Coleman that nominated me, and I just visited him, and he was aware of our plans and the fact I'm teaching in Maine and stuff. So, but they have a prison outreach program too. And so I'm really hoping to do a little more outreach stuff, whether that's having some mm-hmm. spots open in my own shop to have people that can't afford to take these classes come out and take classes. I just have a need. When you build really expensive furniture all the time, you kind of want to do a little bit for others.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Get back a little bit. That makes sense. And I've heard that's a sweet spot from a number of furniture makers that do teach. Is like, if you can have them come to your shop and you can teach in your own own shop, and you got the space to do it, that's a sweet spot.
It starts wearing on you all to travel. I will still travel. Like, I don't see me giving up Mark Adams. He treats me very well, and mm-hmm. You know, I love teaching at Kate's school. Kate just makes it so pleasant, so fun. You know, brings afternoon tea. Like, she just. It's stupid little stuff, and she's a genius doing it. But it's like, that's the reason we return. Is
exactly. We had her on a few months ago, and it was just I need to go take a class there, because it sounds like a cool place. Yeah,
she's awesome. And then of course, the Austin School of Furniture. Like, even if I move, I'm still obviously going to be back there teaching as much as I can. And so I don't see me giving up the traveling, but it would be nice to travel a little bit less and to have the option to teach at my space.
Yeah. And, you know, plus Austin just built that shed in his backyard. You can sleep there.
There you go. that's where he put me too.
Yeah, probably. Well, anyway, well, that's outstanding. Well, I would ask, we usually always follow up going, what's next for you? But I think you have addressed what's next for you.
Sorry, I jumped ahead.
No, you're good.
That is absolutely fantastic. Well, let's move on to our fortnightly beer choices. So I am drinking one of these new lifestyle beers. This is Troy Aikman's beer. And it's called 8 because he wore the number 8. And it's like one of these low calorie, 90 calories, 2.6 carbs, and it's got a low alcohol content. But being a big Cowboys fan, I figured I at least had to buy a 6-pack and try it out. And If you would have said this is Miller Lite, I would have said, yes, this is Miller Lite. If you would have said this is Coors Light, I would have said, yes, this is Coors Light. So,
yep, that's it. For possibly a cheaper price without Troy's number on it, you might have gotten the same experience.
Yeah, this was about, I don't know. I think it was something like $8 for a six pack. So, yeah.
That's not bad. It really isn't. Yeah. It's not, but. I've not heard of that, and I'm not in Texas, so probably Troy Aikman's not going to sell me any beer in Ohio, probably. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I heard about it, you know, he's done some interviews, and I go, I'm probably not going to enjoy it, but
I gotta at least try it.
So,
right.
There you go. So where are you drinking, Sean?
So back to the Dogfish Head, as they keep on bringing out they tend to bring out new things as summer's approaching.
I passed six-pack after six-pack of Dogfish Heads.
Yeah.
I was going for the number eight here.
You can normally get your 60-minute. I was happy to see Sequench was back out. I do like that one. It's a little sour. But this one I picked up, it's the Mandarin and Mango Crush, which is, obviously those citrus fruits.
Right.
But otherwise, just a kind of a standard ale. Very good. Nice little, it did get warmer there. It's going to get cold here for a second, but we're approaching summertime. That good, like kind of fruity, citrusy, little refreshment to the ale. And Dogfish is always good for being a little heavy. What is this? Is that 8 or 9? No, 6% alcohol. So not even that bad. Yeah. So not going to knock you off your shorts, but, you're, nice to drink in your basement while you're recording a podcast, at least. So what about you, Phil? What are you sipping on?
So I'm lame. I don't drink alcohol.
There's no lame. No.
It's 7 years now, but boy, you guys are making it sound really good. I'm drinking a sparkling water, H-E-B.
Orange. Oh, fantastic. You can't go wrong with. See, now that's where you're going to miss if you move to New York. You're going to miss the HEB.
No, I will miss HEB. No kidding.
You're going to have to have people send you like care packages and stuff.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think I'll just start making my own like kombucha or something.
It's the internet age. Can't you get that stuff shipped somewhere?
Probably. Yeah.
I've talked about HEB on this podcast before to my co-hosts who don't live in Texas. And they're like, what are you talking about? A grocery store? It's like, no, you just don't understand.
HEB
is pretty old. And we got one hand Wembley, and they, Wembley tries to keep the bigger companies out, which I'm pretty happy about. But HEB did get in, and it's a smaller kind of boutique one, but they did a fantastic job. Like I love the fact that they recycled all of the, it was a high school they knocked down, and all the flooring from the gym is actually in the HEB. All the light fixtures at the cashiers are made by local artists, so there's a lot of stuff they did to like make it more special for Wembley. So we were very excited. It's like 3 minutes away. I mean, it's a drive. So, we'll miss it. Although when we lived in Florida, we thought we would never get over missing Publix.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Publix sandwiches. I love Publix. And stuff like
that. Yeah. So, maybe there's something in Vermont.
There probably is.
There probably is.
A lot of farm-to-table type stuff.
I mean, it could be Kroger. I mean, you never know. Oh, and that's what I got up here,
And, we got Kroger's too, but,
It's no HEB. It's not an HEB. I get it.
Well, so, Phil, so where can folks find you on the interwebs?
Instagram is pretty much where I'm at most of the time. I do stay off of it during the week. I put it on my phone Friday and Saturday, and then I get rid of it for the rest of the time. And been doing that for a little while, and I'll keep at it for a little while. But Instagram is pretty much where I'm at. I have some stuff on YouTube. There's some videos I'm pretty proud of, like Milling 101 and stuff that I did with Austin Waldo, and I think those are good videos. I'm not a YouTube guy. I don't have that skill set. It takes so much freaking work. And then my website, Philip Morley Furniture. So just type in Philip Morley Furniture, and that's will get You'll you somewhere.
I must say your website is outstanding. So
thanks. Really. It's a work in progress always. And that's Austin Waldo. I mean, I'm telling you, like, what am I going to do without Austin Waldo? But maybe I'll take him with me. He had to do all of that stuff. So I'm continuously working on the website. I think for too long, I put my eggs in one basket and forgot about my website. So that's my focus recently, is trying to get that going. So Austin manages that.
Well, maybe you can answer one question. So is Austin School of Furniture named after the city or the man?
It's named after the city. he will never tell you.
No, he will never tell me. We've asked him that numerous times.
He's called Austin.
Yeah. Well, if he ever moves and the school follows him, will it still be called Austin or will it be the city of destination? That'll be the answer.
Yeah.
That'll tell you. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, you can always find me on Instagram at Bart.Kyle or BB Custom Tools, bbcustomtools.com, or on YouTube under BB Custom Tools or Kyle Barton. And in fact, that new lathe tapering jig is just on my personal YouTube channel.
So. Kyle Barton style one.
Exactly. So, Sean, where can folks find you?
You can follow me on most social medias at SeanW78.
And do we have some reviews?
We do. On our episode 451 with Andrew Hunter, Benjamin Allen Furniture said, really looking forward to listening to this episode. And I hope he did listen and enjoyed it. He hasn't reported since, but very nice. John Joffe, again, kind of similarly, said, I cannot wait. Thank you, John. Mark Holland 3 said, I love this episode, although I wished it were much longer. Wow.
Wow. I agree with that. I listened to the Andrew Hunter one.
And you wanted it longer?
Yeah. He's such a fantastic guy.
He's a cool dude.
We need to have him back.
Yeah, we will. We will.
He said, he continues to say, I advise anyone to take a class with Andrew by any means necessary. Whether you are interested in Japanese woodworking or not, you will leave his class with a new way to love your process. I left his class with a newly found respect for craft and for who I am within it. Andrew is a very humble, amazing person with a mission to keep tradition and craft alive. Please have him on again. That is a glowing review.
Yes. Yes.
My gosh. So Mark, we hope to, for sure. We will definitely have him on again. He was fascinating to talk to, and I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to come down to the event down in Texas. I wish. Please absorb as much of him as you can when you're down there.
Yeah.
But that is phenomenal.
Yeah, he's supposed to convert me to Japanese hand planes at the Texas Woodworking Festival. So I'm looking forward to that. So
that is his life goal, is to slowly convert the world to all Western planes.
Which is funny that I never bought into the romance of, obviously my biggest influence is James Konoff is one of my biggest influences. Mm-hmm. And the Cronovian type body hand planes. And it wasn't until Leslie started selling the H&T Gordon hand planes that those are the planes I go to now pretty much 99% of the time. I absolutely love the process. I love the finish. To me, it's almost magical. That smoother with the 55 angle.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unbelievable. So yeah, I wanted to take Andrew's hand plane class, but I couldn't make it. So one day, there's many classes I want to take. So hopefully at some point I can get to do that.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.